Hi, Remember Me listeners. As many of you know, Rachel and I are obsessed with music, mostly because of our parents, Leah and Frank. They used to play records from Jimi Hendrix to Prince to Dolly Parton. For this reason, we are so excited that our latest sponsor is a company called Vinyl Confessions. Vinyl Confessions is an online vinyl record store with a mission to heal the world of its pain one record at a time. Vinyl Confessions albums are all carefully curated by its owner, Jeff, and he has an amazing selection from live albums to classics to brand new albums like Billie Eilish. We want you to go check out vinylconfessions.com and use our code REMEMBERME for 20% off your order. That's vinylconfessions.com, VNYLconfessions.com. Use our code REMEMBERME for 20% off your order. Hi everyone, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Maria, and we're the hosts of Remember Me.
This podcast is dedicated to preserving the memories of those diagnosed with dementia.
We hope this episode helps you feel more connected, provides a deeper understanding, and allows you to learn to accept the good.
Always, always accept the good.
This is Remember Me.
Tonight we have the pleasure of speaking with Stephanie, and she is going to be telling us all about her journey with her husband, Paul.
Hi, Stephanie.
Thank you both so much for having me. It's truly an honor to be here.
We're so happy to have you. So we like to just jump right in and hear, and I don't think we've ever heard the same story twice here. What was that first interaction that you thought, like, wait a minute, like something's not quite right with Paul?
You know, it's funny. You hear a lot about the patients unaware of their own illness, but Paul was. This was probably back in 2011, 2012. He was a mechanical engineer, built airplanes and space shuttles and very well decorated. And he wasn't able to perform his job. And he would send me emails and call me, and I can't do this anymore. My brain's not working. And I would just say, honey, I think you're just, you know, midlife crisis, or maybe you need something different. You're doing fine. You're overly critical on yourself. But he just became more relentless in that. So I think I was in denial at first when he was more in tune to something breaking down.
And how old was he at this time?
So he's 62 now. That was in 2011. So we're looking, 10 years ago. So 52 years old.
Okay.
So I was in denial. And I thought, you know, maybe he's depressed. It's ADD. I think I went through everything. When I realized there was something more to it, was probably a year or so after, he called me from work. And the nature of his job, he worked on a military base, so I couldn't get to him. And he called me crying. And he said, I don't know what's wrong. I don't know where I am. I don't know what I'm doing. Just very confused. And I couldn't get to him because he was on a base and I was worried. And I said, you need to come home. Can you get home? Do I need to get help? And he said, no, I can get home. So he got home and he looked horrible. There was like a glaze in his eyes, almost a detachment. I took him to the emergency room and they did some scans, and we were in a very small town, rural town in Maryland. And they swore it was just a seizure of some sort that he had. And so I wasn't convinced of that, but I had to accept it. And they put him on medical leave, took away his license. And then his mother developed Alzheimer's, which is the dementia I'm familiar with. And Paul was her power of attorney. Paul had a security clearance for his job. And in order to maintain the security clearance, he had to maintain our finances, which I gladly let him do. And he started missing bills, and then I'm missing our tax returns, years of tax returns. And he received a letter from his employer saying, we're not going to renew your security clearance because of your financial status. And that's when I became aware something's really wrong, because the Paul I knew was meticulous about our bills. And he did the same with his mother's bills. And she was trying to qualify for Medicaid. So she was in a home and we were spending down her, because it's Paul and I, but, you know, spending down her finances so she could get the Medicaid qualification. He completely lost sight of it. And he and I became personally responsible for her care at the home and wiped out our savings that we had for our children's college. He would have never done that either, you know, my Paul, because he was always responsible in that regard. And there was a lot of anger there for me when that happened. You know, I was, how could you do this to us? And it was an internal fight, because on the one hand, I knew it wasn't him. But on the other hand, it was physically him. It was him doing the motions. And he financially, it didn't devastate us, but it hurt. Right. You know?
So you said it kind of sounded like at that point you knew that he wasn't really in control. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like when you saw the finances change, you're like, something is really not okay. So how did you approach that? Did he agree with you? Like, yes, let's go get this checked out? Or what was the next step?
We went to marital counseling. We approached it that way. And a lot of fighting was ensuing. A lot of fighting. And he begged the therapist to refer him to get a PEC, not a PET scan, but is it a SPEC scan, I believe they're called. Controversial scans, which I knew they were. So I didn't want him to get one because, you know, I knew there was some controversy there as to the reading of them. But we continued with this therapist, and then we became empty nesters. This is when we sought treatment and started the road to diagnosis. Both of our children were in college for the first year. They came home for Thanksgiving, and of course, excited mom to have my children home. And my husband and I had been fighting like cats and dogs. And he wouldn't get out of bed on Thanksgiving morning. I was cooking and the girls were helping me. And we kept, are you getting up? No. And he stayed in bed. He didn't get up till 5 o'clock that day. And he, again, that glazed look on his eye, just that detached look.
That unreachable look. I remember it.
It's a very haunting look. And then the rage that was there too. And my husband always had a temper, but not like what I saw. And my children became afraid. And we sat and we had dinner on Thanksgiving. A raging fight ensued. He left the table and my children looked at me and said, Mom, you have to leave. You are no longer safe. We don't feel safe leaving you here. And so I wasn't comfortable leaving because I knew something wasn't right, but I was also afraid. And so we came up with a plan and we gave him an ultimatum. And we said, you have to go get some help. I will agree to find you a place that will look at neurological issues and also psychological issues. And if you don't do that, then I have to go because this isn't a healthy place to be. And he agreed. So that Sunday after Thanksgiving 2019, because I did not want him, we lived in Florida at the time. I wasn't a fan of their medical system there. So I called hospitals up the northeast side of the coast and MGH said they would take him. And so that Sunday, I drove to 3 different airports and dropped off 3 different people to 3 different destinations and felt the most empty and sad I have ever felt in my entire life, I think. And MGH got him. They admitted him to the psych ward, to the psych section. But they agreed to look at neurological stuff as well. And the social worker called me and said that he has some atrophy showing up on his MRI. They didn't do a PET scan at that time. And I was like, great. I know that sounds disgusting to say, but I was like, I have something tangible to go with, you know?
I remember that feeling. Totally bittersweet. Mm-hmm.
It is. It's like, I can deal with some, if I know what it is, but the unknown, it was, mm-hmm. I couldn't deal with it.
And you're watching someone that you know so well behave in a way that you've never seen before. That's so disappointing that like, when you do have the answer, you do have like a, I would say like a half a second of relief of like, oh my God, it's not them.
Right.
Like they can't control it. But then I feel like a day later it sets in and it's like, oh no.
Right. That's exactly it. And then when they discharged him though, they did not give him the discharge diagnosis of dementia. And so I felt like I was back to square one and cheated because it's like, well, without that, he's going to have to go back to work and he can't work. We can't go claim disability. We can't do all these. And my world just fell apart in front of me, you know, but I was able to take that bit of knowledge and run with it. And that's when I ran into frontotemporal dementia. I have a very dear friend that's a nurse practitioner, and she did some research and she said, I want you to look at this. And she sent me the list of symptoms. And I said, oh my God, that's what he has. That is what he has. But it was just a strange tale because, you know, he was discharged and had to see a psychiatrist. And they're like, no, this is bipolar. This is not dementia. And I said, will you at least just read the symptoms? Because this is dementia. And no, this is not dementia. He's too young to have dementia. No, you know, if you would read what I'm showing you, no.
Right. And this was at MGH?
No. This was in Florida after he was discharged, not MGH.
Okay.
And what was his personality like at this time? Was he still combative or was he a little more docile? What was Paul like?
We were still getting the meds right. So at this point, he was up all night long and it was just he and I in the house. I was in grad school. I remember waking up one night at 2 a.m. to a saw cutting down the cabinets in our house. And it was like a panicked feeling that didn't.
Wait. He was taking down the cabinets in your house with a saw.
With a saw.
He was. Did you have plans to do that?
No. It was just the microwave always set kind of low and it was not to code. And so he said, no, I guess he just got a whim at 2 a.m. to go fix this. And the saw came out and we weren't sleeping in the same room at that time. And so it was, I woke up to a saw buzzing. And I think I was just so defeated and so exhausted. I just threw my hands up and said, good night.
Yeah. And let him enjoy your saw. Yeah. Sometimes that's the best thing you can do when there's a behavioral variant in play because, okay, you want to saw that? Saw it. You want to go for a walk into it? Go. It's like sometimes it's rationalizing with like a three-year-old. You just can't. You can't do it.
This is reminding me a lot of your mom's story, Rachel.
So much of my mom's story.
Yeah, and just that frustration of dealing with so many personality, finance, all kinds of challenges in your relationship, mm-hmm. but it's like mm-hmm. not even it's the person, not the you person married. You married, you know?
Right. Yeah. Mm-mm. And no. Stephanie, at this time, were you still kind of intimidated by him or did you feel a little bit more safe in the house?
I felt a little more safe because the medicines that he was discharged with did help, but the psychiatrist in Florida was convinced he was bipolar and decided to adjust the meds, and those meds made it worse. And so he was staying up all night. One day he decided to empty every single cabinet drawer in my house. And again, I was just defeated and my house looked like a hoarder. I mean, it was just everything. And I asked him when he did this, I said, what are you doing? I'm organizing, except the stuff never went back. And he emptied our entire garage onto the driveway and we got written up by the homeowners association because he had everything out on our driveway, you know. But that's when I started to join Facebook groups like the AFTD group and the FTD groups. And I got a little more aware of what doctors and hospitals treated or familiar with it. Truly, it was by a blessing. I found out that the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville knew about FTD, and I called them crying, sobbing, and I said, I think my husband has this. I need you to see him. And I hear so many stories of people on a waiting list for a year or months and months. I got in 3 weeks with him.
Wow.
It was truly amazing. And the neurologist there said the first visit, this is FTD. This is FTD. Of course, we had to go through the PET scan and, you know, all the testing, but it all showed, yeah, he knew. But he got the meds right. And since then, I will say life has been much more pleasant and enjoyable.
Is he still at home with you?
He is. He is. He's very quiet. He's calm. He does get anxious. That's still, he's very, very anxious. And he does have some OCD patterns and stuff, but he truly seems happy, you know, and that after all the chaos for that many years of unhappiness, that's a gift to me to see him happy. Although I know where this road leads, I know he's happy.
Do you think he has any, does he recognize the diagnosis? Can he say like, I have FTD, that's why I act like this?
He will, it's because we're new here and he introduced himself to our neighbors, you know, and he apparently, that was the first thing he said, my name is Paul and I have dementia. You know, and because when I followed up with the neighbors to say, just to let you know, if you see anything off, you know, he has dementia. Oh, he already told us, you know, but he's really, I don't know if he's resentful or not, but he hates that the driver's license was taken away. Like, he does not see any reason why he cannot drive. And the other day we were trying to work out some logistics with appointments and he goes, oh, I could just drive myself. And my daughter looked at him and laughed and said, no, you can't. And he laughed it off. But he does struggle a lot losing that independence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And what about your daughters? How are they doing?
They are, first of all, they are extremely intelligent children. And I know everybody, every mother says that, but my mom, my kids are. My youngest, she'll graduate college this year at 18. So she truly is a genius, you know. And my other daughter is a physics, astrophysics major. So they're smart kids. So they know about this illness. But I do think one of them has a little bit of denial going on to the severity. And with COVID, she had the option this past year to stay home or go back to school. And she told me, she said, you know, Mom, I don't want to regret not being given the option to be with Dad. So I'm going to be with Dad, although she truly misses school and she's going back. But I worry because the youngest one, she did go back. And when she came home for a break, she saw a big difference from when she had left.
Right.
And I'm concerned for my oldest experiencing that because it was a challenge for my youngest to see.
I think it's so hard being at that age and going through this when you're kind of in those like really formidable like adult years that are generally pretty carefree and, you know, doing well in school, but enjoying school and finding out what you like. And then to have all of this going on at home, I just, my heart goes out to anyone kind of juggling that. I've seen my sisters, I have younger sisters that, you know, were similar ages going through this with my mom. And I think it's just it's a really tough decision, you know, to go live your life or to be at home. I don't think there's a wrong decision. It's just all really hard. So refresh my memory a little bit. So you were down in Florida, you did not get the diagnosis. Then you went to Mayo Clinic. And then how did you guys end up here in Massachusetts?
With my husband's job, we moved around a lot. I grew up military. I didn't move as much as I moved with my husband. So we had no family or in Florida. We do have family in Georgia, but I didn't trust the healthcare system. I knew the healthcare system up here. And my best friend that I was referring to, she lives here. And this was always somewhere I wanted to live. And I was like, why not go? And his family lives only 4 hours away. And it's one of those things where we get along fine, but probably shouldn't be in the same city kind of thing, you know? So
this a healthy is a good distance is good. Yeah.
So they can visit with him. And it's been nice because they do come up and visit. And it's an easy drive for them to just do a weekend or something. So that's been nice.
I think the million-dollar question that Maria and I are both, well, I can't speak for Maria, but I'm wondering, is how do you take care of yourself?
That has been a very big struggle for me. My entire adult life, I've suffered from depression. And this had to kind of pull up my bootstraps and take over. We were married in 24 years ago, and he has protected me and gotten me through those really dark times of depression, and now he can't. But I do find time with to go grab coffee with my friend, or we just did a girls' overnight trip, and that was refreshing to do as well. So just I try to do little things like that, and it's important not to create in your mind a break that's too much of a break, if that makes sense, you know, because that's not realistic and that's going to let you down. So you have to take little breaks where you can. And honestly, I am very nervous. Both my children go back to school. So and they afford me the opportunity to run to the grocery store by myself or whatever that is. And so I'm a little nervous what that's going to look like. Mm-hmm.
What is like a day in the life of caregiving at this stage with your husband? Are you able to, you know, work from home and he can entertain himself? Does he do adult daycare or, you know, how are you juggling that?
I am working from home. So that's been a very nice thing to be able to do. Paul is self-sufficient. He doesn't require me to do too much for him right at this time. I know that's coming. But you may need to remind him, you know, you need to eat, you need to take your medicine. But for the most part, he still takes care of himself. And when we moved here, one neat thing about the Northeast that we didn't experience in the South are these senior centers in the community. And we live within walking distance of our senior center. And when we moved here, of course, COVID was here, but he was like, I'm not doing that. You know, I'm not that age. I'm not there. So I volunteered to do Meals on Wheels with the hopes that he would accompany me and get used to it. And now he goes twice a week and he can walk there because it's a couple houses down and he's made some really good friends and they come pick him up now and they come over and play cribbage. And so they do those things, which has been a godsend really. So at this point, that's where we are. His provider has put a bug in my ear that it is time to start thinking about, you know, getting some help. And that's a hard pill for me to swallow and Paul to swallow.
Yes, I know that was a really, really tough part of the journey for my dad. He would say, someone had suggested to him, you know, do you think you could get like a day companion for Leah, you know, take her to the mall? She was really in a phase of like wanting to go to Starbucks every morning, wanting to go to the mall, very into the shopping phase. And my dad said, companion, like, I'm her companion. I'm her husband. Like, he was so focused on that word. And I'm right. Like, Dad, this is going to give you some time to, like, I don't know, shower, like, work, eat, like, maybe exercise, like, woo. Right. And they do say you kind of want to bring someone in even before you think you need it. Because then that'll give your loved one a chance to adjust. And that is what happened with my mom. We definitely brought someone in. I mean, we had to really pressure my dad into it. But we had a woman come through, like, I think it was, like, arranged through, like, the senior center in our town. And she came a couple hours, like, every day and would, like, take my mom out. And I always looked at it as like my mom's getting more social interaction. She's getting to do more and my dad is getting more rest so he can do more. So it was all like for the benefit of everyone. But I totally understand it's really hard to take that step, but but I think it's quite an adjustment to be like, wow, my spouse needs like help from someone besides me now, and that must be really challenging.
There's definitely a shift in perspective, but I think like Maria said, to be proactive over reactive will save that like response of panic and overwhelm.
I think we hear too, when it comes to, you know, putting someone in skilled nursing or getting any sort of like intervention in terms of care, a lot of times it's like this situation of like maybe something with like the saw in the middle of the night. It's like sometimes it comes to like a safety issue as well. And sometimes I think like we talk about this whole concept of control, like we have no control over this journey, but maybe to have the control of you decide when you're taking that step instead of letting the decision be made for you, I think is something that we've kind of like heard as a theme in a lot of our conversations. That's just our two cents.
I like that. Yeah, no, I like that.
There's our advice that nobody asked for. But
yeah, that no one asked for.
I appreciate it. And, you know, the people listening may be in my shoes. Like, and what you, how you described your father is exactly it. It's like, that's my job. Why? Right. I can't.
Another piece, and we don't have to get into it too much, but like, do you feel like you have a partner? Like, what is your relationship with him like now?
It's definitely different. And well, when a couple is married, they're going to have a physical relationship too. And there's a lot of mental combativeness within my own mind with that. Paul is still, you know, he's in early stages, they say. So, you know, I'm not changing diapers and bathing and doing those things, but he's still very childlike. And that's not what I would have as a partner in life. So I love my husband immensely. And but there is a challenge within myself of what is that supposed to, and I feel guilt for not being the same affectionate person, physically affectionate person that I once was. But on the other hand, it's just not right either, you know? And so we do a lot together. We're together all the time. And I'm one of those that are, you need to get out, you need to get out. And so I try to get them out a lot and do things. And there's sweet gestures, there's sweet moments of holding hands. You know, last night I had a little bit of a breakdown of anxiety over the kids going back. It was all hitting me that this is happening, you know. And he was in his recliner and he stood up, he grabbed his blanket and he sat beside me and he said, just let me hold you, you know. So he's still there. And I cried in his arms. And, you know, so it, while it's very different from what it once was, I'm blessed that I still get the moments frequently enough that I see the old him, you know.
Right. It's a gift. That absolutely. And when you focus on that and accept the good, as we say, it's going to keep revealing itself to you. And that's beautiful that, you know, I'm going to take that little moment that you shared with us. I love that. Because sometimes, really, like, I just want someone to, like, just hold me. Just right. Hold me. That's all. I don't need words. I just hold right. Me. That's beautiful. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Did you know that nutrition plays a big role in the health of our brains? That's why we love NeuroReserve, a nutrition and preventative health company. NeuroReserve was founded by our inspiring friend, Ed Park, who dedicated his life to improving brain health after losing his father to dementia and Parkinson's. NeuroReserve's daily supplement, Relevate, was designed upon brain-protective diets that have strong evidence of reducing the risk of brain decline and dementia. In every serving of Relevate, you'll find a comprehensive, cost-effective bundle of 17 brain-healthy nutrients for less than buying a cup of coffee every day. Created by NeuroReserve's incredible team of leading clinicians and researchers, Relevate was developed to help your brain span match your lifespan. Learn more about NeuroReserve and their evidence-backed product, Relevate, at neuroreserve.com.
Use code REMEMBERME at checkout for 15% off all orders of Relevate, including subscriptions. That's neuroreserve.com, code REMEMBERME.
And we're back. How do you remind yourself who your husband, who Paul was before FTD, and or is that a struggle for you?
No, I miss who Paul was before in so many ways. And like I mentioned, he was a mechanical engineer, and he, you know, designed the space shuttle, and there's awards and stuff that he was given for that. And so we remind him when he, because he gets down, he misses his career. He feels cheated that he was forced to retire from that career when he wasn't ready. And so we just talk about those stories all the time about his career or our relationship. You know, we'll have moments where, do you remember when we did this? And oh yeah, you know, and it's just, we just keep bringing up the past and to keep it in the present. And that's something that we do for all four of us, really, because we don't want to forget who he was. We don't want to distance ourselves from who he was, because he was such a beautiful, smart, loving, caring soul. And he still is. And we see it still, like I was saying. And we just, you know, we just keep bringing the past into now, you know, and just realize right. that.
Can I ask my favorite question?
Yeah, Rachel? I was going to say, I'm sure Maria is going to ask this. Go for it.
Stephanie, can you tell us how you met your husband?
Yeah. So Paul and I have an age difference. He's 17 years my senior.
And this is Rachel's time to be like, what?
I know, but I'm too like excited to hear about as soon as she said 17, I'm like, this is going to be good.
So I thought I wanted to be an engineer when I was younger. And my father worked at the same company that Paul worked at, and he was able to help me get a job in the engineering department in Savannah, Georgia, at this business. And Paul started a week before I did, I think, and he had just moved there from California, didn't know a soul. And we met, and it just started as a friendship, really, you know, and then it just, I learned pretty quickly I didn't want to be an engineer, but we started dating. And it was funny because, you know, my father is very much the Southern man, you know, you have to meet the guy that's taking my daughter out. And I hid that from him, and he didn't, they worked in different departments, so he didn't know who Paul was. I didn't give a name, but he just knew.
So you're all working at the same place.
At the same place.
And you're hiding your 17 years your senior boyfriend.
People make right. movies about this.
I love it.
Right? And the secret didn't last too long. Eventually they met. And now that I have children that are 18 and 20, you know, I get, that's probably pretty scary. And I would probably have a fit myself. But my parents really were calm about it. I guess they just kind of was like, oh, that'll work itself out. Never did. And
surprise, surprise.
And have, I know, right? And they both have come to really love and appreciate Paul mm-hmm. and how well he took care of me and our children. And yeah, so we've been together a long time, long time.
In your eyes, watching him be a father to your girls, how could you describe him?
Oh, man. From the moment we were engaged, I would say we started talking about having a family, and that was important to both of us. But then we had trouble having a family and had to resort to medical treatment in order to do so. And I always tell my children, I said, you girls were wanted. Don't you ever doubt that, because we worked hard. And he just truly adores both of our children. They are the light of his eyes. They had him wrapped around his finger since they were born, you know, but there's a mutual respect between them. And he was the dad that was, you know, would let them build crazy things and make the biggest messes. And I was, don't let them do that, you know? And, he was just, oh man, just a wonderful father, and told them they could be and do anything they wanted. And he told them, as long as you try your hardest, I don't, you know, like in school, I don't care what kind of grade you get. he was a man of love, and they know that. And some people don't know that side of Paul, you know, so it's a neat side to see. And I still see it today. So proud of them. So proud of those girls. And they talk about the future and wonder what it will look like, you know, what will he miss? And I think those are important conversations to have. You don't want to live there, but right. I think you need to have them too. And
yeah, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, your mind goes there. But like you said, it's as much as you can do to stay in the present. Because now I'm on the side of like looking back, being like, I wish I wasn't so worried about the end. You know, I wish I was enjoying.
But remember when we were in it, we were terrified.
It's just like,
sure. It's human.
It's coulda, woulda, shoulda, you know, all that kind of stuff. But totally. It's like, I remember with my mom when I had Liam, I have one son, Liam. And when I had him, I was living with my parents. I was actually like one of my mom's caregivers and I brought my son home.
Yeah.
And I remember just being like so deeply sad, like seeing that she couldn't interact with him in the way that she should have, you know. But now I look back at pictures and I'm like so happy at these like pictures and videos that I have of the two of them together. So it's just, there's like no answer, right, Rachel?
No, mm-hmm. The grass is always greener because we were like, once he passes, that's what I would say. Once he passes away, he can finally be in peace and we don't have to worry and it'll be so different and I'll be less anxious and more present. That's not true.
No.
Right.
All I want for him is to be back here, but I want him healthy. And then I want, you know, so you're never going to get what you want in a disease like this.
Right.
But what Maria and I try to do is, number one, remember the person for who they were and truly are. But two, like, because we are on this side of it, we can, I don't even know the word, preach, stand on our soapbox and say all those little moments that don't seem like much, or you're like, God, I wish you just were, could talk to me or this. Those are like the sweetest moments. Even when I look back at my dad, like the drool and the, you know, kind of vocalizing all these weird noises, I'd be like, what is, come on. And now I'm like, what I would give to hear that, you know? So right. It's stopping and smelling the roses, I guess. I don't know.
I think holding on to those moments, like you said too, of can I hold you? I'm going to think about that so much. Like, I just want to hold you. Like those kinds of things. And I think, it's like what they say. It's like so irritating, you know, when people tell you with your babies, they're like,
enjoy the moment.
Fast.
Oh,
and it's like, this sucks. Like, shut up. But it's like, now I feel like that's what we're saying to people on the FTD journey is like, enjoy. Right. Even enjoy those sucky days, you know.
Right.
Or just like, even if you don't enjoy it, like, pour yourself a beer and then start again the next day and try and enjoy something the next day. You know,
right,
like
right.
It's just such a journey. It's such a journey. And like people really, truly do not understand unless they've walked it. And I don't understand the spouse journey whatsoever, but we really appreciate you coming to share that, you know, perspective with us. And I think a good place to kind of end before we get to the letter would be for you to tell us a little bit about what Paul was like as a husband and kind of what you want to remember about that.
You know, I was listening to one of your podcasts and you were saying, what do you miss most about your spouse or something to that effect? That really made me ponder, think a lot. And you know, it's the sweet gestures that he did. It was not uncommon for him to come home from work with flowers. Or I would get emails during the day, love notes, I would say, you know, from Paul. You know, I miss that, but he always did those things. And he sensed when I was off and he was able to come in and take care of me and, you know, make my day better. And I hope I did that for him too, you know, but he was just so loving and so thoughtful. He loved hard and he adored me and he still does. And he adores the girls, you know, he just, we are his everything, and we always have been. And I am so grateful to have a husband that thought so highly of me, even when it was probably difficult to do. And I'm thankful for that gift.
That's beautiful. I like want to go hug my husband. Because I really resonate. Like I've struggled with depression like since I was a little kid, and just Mike, my husband, is like my person that gets that. And like the first time I've had just like, I don't know, like someone who like senses and knows how to deal with it and like is like my calm. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine how challenging it is when that changes, because yeah, and when you're with someone for so long, they become a part of you, you know, and how you function is like, do you know what I'm trying to say? Yeah. It's like you function like as a unit.
A unit.
You know? But you're doing everything you can for him. You're an amazing wife. You're amazing mama. Uh-huh. With your super smart kids.
Yes.
I mean, whoa. And we are just going to be thinking about you and wishing you all the best on this really tough journey, but know that you're not alone and keep accepting those good moments when you can. You can have bad days too.
Would you mind sharing a few words that Paul, I think you showed us a birthday card. Is that what it was?
It's the anniversary.
Anniversary. Card. Okay. So I hope it's mushy. I love mushy. Let me get on mute. Whenever you're ready.
Get some Kleenex. Okay.
Paul, I just need to say, he always has spent, he would spend 30, 45 minutes picking out a card. For anybody that got a card from Paul, he spent time picking one out. So this was for our 20th anniversary. And he said, Stephanie, I cannot put into words what my heart and soul feel today. It has taken me 20 years to fully appreciate the wonderful, beautiful, thoughtful, intelligent, kind, sensitive, caring person you are. I am so very thankful for God's gift of you. I am truly trying to be loving and respectful of you. Please always remember that my heart belongs to you, and I am forever grateful for God's gift of you. I am not sure why, but I absolutely feel like the frog who married the beautiful princess. Your kiss, touch, and friendship is all the treasure I could ever hope for. Thank you for a wonderful life and the family and home you make possible. I love you, sweetheart.
Listening to this week's episode. We release new episodes each week now on Tuesdays, so be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. If you want to connect with us, you can follow us on Instagram at Remember Me Podcast, or you can go to our website, remembermeftd.com. And if you want more Remember Me, check out our brand new members only site, Remembers Only. You can sign up at remembermeftd.com/joinRO. This podcast is produced by Maria Kent Beers and Rachel Martinez, and the beautiful music you hear is a song called So Damn Lucky by Bailey Kent.